Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to the latest edition of the Halftime Show. Today is Thursday, December 20th, and it's Sports Talk time. The Halftime Show is presented each and every episode by BetUS, a simply better playbook. I'm your host, Cody Sager, coming to you from the frigid Twin Cities. And with me, as always, is Eric Name. Eric, what's happening?
You know, just snowed in. We have some blizzard conditions here in Salina, Wisconsin, so you know, just trying to get by, but really nothing you can do about it. A lot of snow, and I guess the wind has started to pick up here in the last little bit, so I guess it's going to be blizzard conditions for the night, so hopefully everyone is safe out there.
Oh, lovely. How many inches do you guys got so far?
We had like 6 last night, and I'd probably say another 6 to 7 again today, so probably about 1 foot in total, and now the wind's starting to pick up, so the drifts and stuff can get pretty nasty.
Yeah, because we didn't get anything up here. But we had that snow. We had our snowstorm 2 weeks ago, so we're fine for now.
Yeah, it's been bad up here. So hopefully, like I said, everything ends up being okay and everyone's safe, and hopefully we get through it.
All right. Well, we're still here, so that's all that matters. Even though the world's supposed to end tomorrow, we'll see if that actually happens. Later on the program, our third and final member, Steve Mani, will join us. But anyways, 2 weeks of recording in a row kind of feels like a record after a while. But let's get to it. What do we have to talk about today? The reason why it's only Eric and I for the first half hour is because we need to talk some basketball. Steve doesn't know basketball. He might think he does. He'll probably say a few stupid things, but this is Eric and I. When we first started this show 19 months ago, it's basketball-driven. So tonight, the first half, that's the case. You know, the NBA is hitting its best slate of games next week on Christmas Day. So we're going to do our first quarter report of the season. There's the Warriors, the Lakers, Ricky Rubio. Are we going to buy them? Are we going to sell them? We'll see. Later on, we'll get to the NFL. We'll discuss Kaepernick's 4-touchdown performance and if AP will hit the record. But let's start with the NBA. Clippers, Thunder both have 10-plus win streaks, even though the Thunder are losing right now to the T-Wolves. Bobcats have lost 13 straight. So with a little over first quarter of the schedule completed, we got to now analyze this. So, Eric, what jumps out for you so far this season in the NBA?
For me, it's got to be the Knicks. This offseason, they decided to go away from Jeremy Lin and Lin's sanity and everything that went along with it, and they decided to go with Prigioni and Kidd and Kurt Thomas and Rasheed Wallace, and honestly, I thought they were going to be washed up. Completely, totally washed up, old, without a chance of surviving this year, and they've been the exact opposite. The absolute exact opposite. They move the ball better than anybody else. They shoot the three better than anybody else in the league at a higher percentage and at a higher rate than anybody. And honestly, I can't think of a bigger surprise in the league. It's honestly incredible what they've done.
I kind of have to agree. 19-6, really, I mean, coming into this season, I don't know your opinion. I'll ask you right after this, but if the decision of not keeping him was the right decision then, and really the right decision now, right now it looks like a perfect decision. He's kind of struggling in Houston besides maybe 2 good games. And really, Raymond Felton's back on his Knicks team. You know, he was with the Blazers last year, got tubby. Now he's slimmed back down a little bit, averaging 16 points a game, 6.5 assists, and really, I mean, he's become the second best player on this team. Tyson Chandler, I think his play has dropped. Definitely a step this year. At least I've noticed that. I don't know about you. But still, his PER is 23.1. He's averaging a double-double. I mean, you can't ask for anything more from a center. And then Carmelo Anthony, you know, averaging 28 points a game, 6 rebounds, 2 assists. This guy is, you know, he came in last year. When he came into this Knicks team, it was his team, but it didn't look like his team. Finally, with the lineup they have right now, even though it's completely old and completely just weird, it's a weird team. They have success.
Yeah, it's been unusual. I have to say, like I said before, I'm completely shocked that it has worked out. I thought that the decision they made to go with Kidd and Prigioni at the point guard was a huge mistake. And I thought the way to go was Jeremy Lin. And I've been really proven completely wrong at this point. Felton has been out of his mind for most of the year. Kidd has been out of his mind as well. And really, you look at those guys and they just keep outperforming anything that you really would have ever expected out of them. So, like I said, they're just a huge surprise. And the way Melo's been playing, the fact that he's actually accepted the role as being the power forward and being willing to go into the post and then also pass out of the post and really just be a huge threat from the block, it is almost amazing. It's completely unforeseen at all. Just taking a look at this Knicks team, you had no idea that he had that in him. You think about all the isolation they used to run for him, his lack of passes, and now you look at him and he's a really a team player, and he makes the right passes and moves the ball when it needs to happen. And honestly, I would have never thought in a million years that could have happened.
And now I think everyone's scared now though with Amari possibly coming back this weekend, Shumpert coming back in a couple of weeks as well. I guess people don't know if this dream run of winning 19 of their first 25 ball games is going to continue. With Amari coming back, you talk about Carmelo playing the four. He looks playing at the four like he's been playing that his entire life, which he hasn't. And now with Amari coming back, you know, he's going to move back to the three for the most part. Yeah, he'll still get minutes at the four. He'll save some minutes from Rashid and who else, Ronnie Brewer and Kurt Thomas. But it's going to force Carmelo slightly back to the three, and it's going to be a different offense. How do you feel this team will continue to be?
Like you said, it's honestly a huge concern. Part of me thinks that right now they should attempt to start to try to trade away Amari, but when Amari hasn't played in a couple of years, or I shouldn't say a couple of years, at least a year here, and I should say he hasn't really been successful in a year playing the game. No one knows what his knees are like. No one knows if he can be a successful player in the NBA. And you almost have to kind of wonder how the Knicks are going to go about this, because for him to have any trade value, they have to bring him back. They have to get him probably 30, 35 minutes a game and see that it can be effective. But at the same time, that's something that's going to completely ruin the rotations that they have right now. It's going to completely take away playing time from some of the players they have and really just completely destroy everything that they have going well for them right now. So it's a huge wrench getting thrown into this entire thing. It's a really a difficult situation. You hope that somehow they can get through it, maybe figure out a way to move Amare or to convince him to come off the bench. But with the money he makes and with the player that he's been in the past, I struggle to see how they're going to convince him that he's better as a bench player. I really just don't see it.
Well, Amari did say, I think 2 weeks ago, saying that he'd be okay with come off the bench. But I just think that Amari's saying the right words where he needs to say the right words. If I were this Knicks team, I guess I would try to really ease Amari back, try to see if this lineup works. You know, don't just force him in there, give him 25, 35 minutes. You know, give him Kurt Thomas minutes to begin with, give him 10 minutes, you know, ease him to 15, go out and see if it works. If it works, continue to get to the perfect lineup. If it doesn't work, I guess you figure it out from there. But I mean, you're first in the East, and you get who should be your second best player to come back this week. It should be a blessing, but I don't think the Knicks are looking that way at all. Do you agree?
And yeah, I would honestly agree. It's almost as if they're more worried about it than they are happy about it. And then on top of that, we also mentioned Shumpert. With Iman Shumpert, he brings that level of defense that they have, but you start to take a look at the Knicks this year, and they're really completely dependent on the 3-point play that they've gotten so far this year. They, like I said before, they shoot it at a league high rate. And they make it at a league high rate, which is obviously great, but Shumpert isn't that kind of player. He's not that great of a shooter. He obviously brings more to the defensive side of the ball, but he takes away just as much from the 3-point line and from the scoring. So you have to think, can Shumpert come in and do the exact same kind of thing? And will he ruin the chemistry that they have going on, the success that they've had shooting the three and being more successful offensively rather than defensively. So at the same time, you have to think, how is Shumpert going to fit in? And obviously, the big question everyone thinks about is, how is Amar going to fit in? But at the same time, you're bringing in two players that don't really fit the personality of this team this year, when they fitted a lot better last year. But now, how is this all going to work out? And really, the start they've had has been great, but at the same time, you have to worry about, how are these two going to come in and be effective players in that system?
Time's going to tell. I mean, they play Chicago Friday, Minnesota on Sunday, and then Christmas Day they have L.A., and then they play two more really quickly with Phoenix and Sacramento. They play five games in a matter of a week. So I mean, if Amari's playing four of those five, we'll see how this Knicks team is, especially on the road, on the West Coast road trip. But let's go to a team that's been disappointing, and I just touched on them slightly, and that's the L.A. Lakers. They're 12-14. Really, I mean, Kobe's had a great season, averaging almost 30 a game, 29.5. He's shooting 38% from three, 86% from the line. Kobe's playing better than he's been playing a couple seasons, and somehow this Laker team is still under 500. Can you explain anything why this Laker team's struggling?
It's really just a hodgepodge team kind of thrown together here. There's a bevy of reasons why they've been struggling. First, obviously they fired their coach and got a new one in Mike D'Antoni. So they got rid of Brown, bring in D'Antoni. That's obviously going to cause some confusion, cause your team to struggle a little bit when you go from one system to another. So I think D'Antoni's still getting comfortable in LA. And then you have to take a look at Steve Nash has played a game and a half this year out of the 26 games they've played. So you look at one of your better players, and the one that this system or D'Antoni's system is based on not being in the game. Gasol's been hurt, and when Gasol's played, he hasn't been comfortable. He wasn't comfortable in Mike Brown's system, and he hasn't been incredibly comfortable in D'Antoni's system. So you're looking at one of your better players that are not being comfortable with the way you're playing. Like we said, Kobe's having a great year, but some of these other guys aren't. And then I posed this question on Twitter earlier, it's probably about a week ago. They decided to play Dwight Howard right away, and he's had his back problems, and he had his surgery, and now they're trying to get him back and trying to figure out how to get him involved. But Dwight Howard looks like a shell of the player he used to be. He On the defensive side, he's just not as aggressive as he used to be. He doesn't block the shots he used to. He just can't move the way he used to move around. And you almost have to wonder, like I've said before, I'm not a back specialist, but it's curious to me that they think that the best way for him to get back to 100% is to play injured. There's not really a lot of other injuries that are like that. If you have an ankle sprain, or if your knee just had surgery, or if your wrist just was fractured or something, they don't say, "Well, you're 60%, go ahead and play and you'll play back into shape." They say, "All right, rest it until it's 100% and then come back and play." But with Dwight Howard's back, it was, "Well, you're 60%, let's start to get your back warm and let's start to try to get you back in the flow of things, and that'll help your back heal." But I don't necessarily understand how that works. Maybe it's
Well,
because I'm a complete novice in back injuries, but that just doesn't seem to add up. I feel
no.
like you don't really want a guy with a back injury out there playing and trying to get to 100%. You should rest him and then let him get to 100% and then play him. But like I
Well,
said, I'm not a back specialist.
first of all, you need to get a PhD so we get an update on these injuries and you know what to do. But to me, this is major back surgery. This guy was not supposed to be back until January. Similar to, I guess, yeah, January, February is when Dwight Howard was supposed to be back. And then he's on the court on opening night. To me, that's dumbfounding. I don't understand what they're thinking there. Especially when I understand he's going to be a free agent, but I mean, you're LA, you want to re-sign him. You kind of need to re-sign him to have some type of future. And really, Dwight Howard's kind of killing his future. He does not look good, as you say. Yeah, he's averaging 18 and 12 and but he's averaging only 2.6 blocks. And if you study the stat sheets from years and years past, it's Dwight Howard leading in blocks and rebounds. It's not even close. You know, he's third in rebounds. He's fourth in blocks. And it's pretty much because he's playing 37 minutes a game. And there's no reason why he's shooting. If he's on the court, give him 25, 30 minutes. Why are they pushing him already to about 37 minutes? He's second highest on this team. To me, that's ridiculous, and I just smell disaster to this team.
I agree, and you mentioned that he's second in minutes, and the guy that's in first is Kobe Bryant. That makes no sense. Kobe's been in the league for almost two decades now, and he's playing the most minutes on that team. I know John Hollinger had mentioned this before he had left to go to Memphis and start doing stuff for the Grizzlies, but he had mentioned everyone just bypassed the look of this team and said, all right, it's the Lakers. They have Kobe, they have Dwight, they have Powell, they have Steve Nash. They'll get together. But you look at this team, and there's absolutely no athleticism on it. There's not a single wing guy that can just jump out of the gym, can fly up and down the floor, can really do a whole lot. And you just think, that's what the NBA is now. That's what the NBA has turned into. You need to have those athletes that can do those things. And the Lakers just don't have that. And then on top of that, the NBA has also turned into a league where three-point shooting is huge. I mean, we just talked about the Knicks being one of the best teams in the league because they shoot the three at the highest rate and at the best rate in the league. And you look up and down this Lakers team, and there's just not shooters on it. Sure, you have Jordan Meeks that comes off the bench, but he's only playing 18 minutes a game. And then after that, who else shoots the three well on this team? And there's just not a lot of great shooters. So the NBA has turned to a league that's based on athleticism and three-point shooting, and the Lakers do neither of those things well. And yeah. I don't know if it necessarily matters how well they do those other things if they can't do either. They can't either be athletic or they can't shoot the three. If you can't do either of those two things, you just can't succeed in today's NBA. I just don't see it.
I mean, when this team was originally put together, it didn't pass my eye test. I don't know about you, but, I mean, you're starting a lineup of Steve Nash, Kobe Bryant, Metterwell Peace, Paul Gasol, Dwight Howard. To me, something there doesn't work. Luckily, Metterwell Peace has had a great season, 13.5 points, you know, almost six rebounds, and he's shooting at a good percentage. But he's not the defensive beast that he used to be. And really, as you said, there's no one on this team playing defense. They're 20th in the league in defense. And if they want to score more, they need Jody Meeks. But he can't play defense either. So really, they're going to have to do something. It looks like they want to trade Paul Gasol, but who's going to want to trade for Paul Gasol, and what are they going to get back? They're going to get pennies on the dollar, really. I mean, there's talks about Ryan Anderson. Ryan Anderson is a good player. Don't get me wrong, but Ryan Anderson for Paul Gasol, something that does not compute, in my opinion. But I get this Laker team is just a mess. I don't know if they're – are they going to make the playoffs? They're currently
They're currently constituted, I don't know if they can. Obviously, I want to see them with Steve Nash in Mike D'Antoni's system. That's going to be huge. If Steve Nash can even get 75% of the player that he was when he was with D'Antoni the first go around in Phoenix, then the Lakers can make the playoffs. But if he can't recapture any of that he had in Phoenix, I just don't see how this Lakers team makes the playoffs. Just because Dwight isn't getting any healthier, Kobe isn't getting any younger, and Powell isn't going to get any more confidence with the way everyone in LA treats him. So where is the improvement can come from? I just don't see it.
And one last thing, Kobe Bryant's leading this team in assists with 5 a game. That's an issue. But let's go to a surprising team in the state of California, the Golden State Warriors. They're 17-9. I don't remember if we were talking before the season if we like this team or not. I thought they were a decent team. You know, right now they're shooting to the high scoring team that they usually are. But they're playing a little defense. Somehow David Lee has learned to play defense in the last couple of weeks. Stephen Curry not hurt yet, even though Andrew Bogut is hurt. I don't know if he'll ever come back. But yeah, this team, You have a lot of scorers. You have Curry at almost 20 a game. David Lee just under 20. Klay Thompson, Carl Anthony, Jerry Jackson, all averaging in double digits. Then you have really a slew of guys off the bench that I enjoy. You know, Draymond Green is a rookie. He hasn't really done anything yet. He's not shooting well, but you have the game winner a couple weeks ago. Harrison Barnes, who's started every game so far this year. I know everyone else hated on Barnes. You know, I still like this guy. He's averaging 9 points a game. I think he understands his role right now in the league. He can become better. He can become whatever he wants to be. But right now, he knows that he needs to be really that sixth option for this team. And right now, this team is performing well.
Yeah, they really are. Honestly, going into the season, I was really excited to see how Bogut would play with this team. Because I've always thought that Bogut was one of the most underrated players in the league. What he does defensively as a center is unparalleled by just about anyone in the league except really Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard's the only one that runs the defense as successfully from the center position. Obviously, when healthy, he's not doing the same thing this year. But Bogut's the only kind of player that can make that kind of defensive impact. So I was excited to see him put onto this Warriors team, and obviously that hasn't happened yet. And I thought they would struggle without Bogut, but really they've had a bunch of guys step up. The resurgence of David Lee might be the story, or I should say one of the individual stories of the season thus far, of just a single player really outperforming anything we could have expected from him. You look at 19.8 points per game, 11.2 rebounds per game, and still giving you 3.5 assists. You look at David Lee just as a player that he's had some great seasons. He looks good at times and also look real bad, and then he looks good again. And the question is with him is if he can remain as consistent as he has been. Zach Lowe at Grantland, really one of the best NBA minds, tweeted earlier this week that the Steph Curry-David Lee pick and roll is the best time in basketball because it always gets a basket. And I would have to agree. I mean, you look at Steph Curry, and it was just a guy that I think everyone forgot how fun it was to watch him play just because he was injured all the time. But now that he's healthy, this Warriors team really looks good. You look at Steph Curry, he's able to make plays off the dribble. He's able to obviously shoot the lights out. So he's a threat everywhere on the floor. You look at him, 19.9 points per game, 4 rebounds per game, 6 assists per game. And then pairing that with David Lee, that's just a lethal pick-and-roll combo, and it's really been fun to watch out there in Golden State.
To me, the one thing that you said there that sticks out to me is when he's healthy. He's healthy right now, but I just don't see Curry staying that healthy. I don't know if David Lee's going to be that healthy. This team is one of those teams that just never stays healthy. We saw it last year. We've seen it all Curry's entire career. I mean, he could be a top-tier player in this league if he had some other guy's ankles, but right – his ankles, they're not good ankles, and he'll probably get hurt soon. I would just guess. It's just his track record. If he stays healthy, that's great, but I don't know how long this is going to last at Golden State. You know, 17-9, it's a really good start for this team right now. They're right now the 5 seed ahead of Denver, Minnesota, Houston, and, you know, looking outside are Utah, Dallas, and also the Lakers. So there's a lot of teams still hunting for this playoff. His playoff spots in the West. So even though a great start so far for Golden State, I don't know if they're even going to make the playoffs depending on how their health is for the rest of the year, because you have teams like Utah, who I don't even think we're going to talk about today, but they're at one heck of a team. We talked about the Lakers already. You know, they're going to be vying for these spots too. And, you know, I don't think Denver's going to move. I don't think San Antonio, Memphis, Clippers, or OKC are going to move. And I don't think Minnesota's going to move. So it's really – Golden State, Houston, are they going to stay in the playoffs? It'll be tough.
Yeah, I mean, once again, the West is just stacked. And I almost feel bad for a lot of teams in the West. Just because you look at, once again, you look at the Eastern Conference, and it's just so sorry at the bottom end that you right now, you look at the Milwaukee Bucks, 13-11, a fifth seed in the Eastern Conference. That's insane. Just watching this Bucks team play, that they are the fifth seed in the Eastern Conference. When you look over at the Western Conference, and though their records might not be as good as you'd expected, there's a lot of teams that aren't in the playoffs right now in the Western Conference, that I think if you would put them head to head with the Bucks, you would make that team the favorite in the Western Conference a million times. So once again, the Western Conference is going to be really interesting. It's going to be really interesting to see who can hold on to those eight playoff spots, because there's probably probably 12 teams in the Western Conference that are probably deserving of a playoff spot.
Right. One of those teams is the Minnesota Timberwolves. I just want to touch base on you quick on this team. They're 12-11. Yeah, that's nice, but they have Ricky Rubio back. Ricky Rubio. I'm just looking out to my window, hoping Ricky's right there. He's not. He's still playing. But the Timberwolves team, they're going to improve. They're 12-11 right now with Kevin Love getting back to the health that he should be at. You know, Rubio and Petkovic and just this nucleus that's going to be there if they're all healthy. It's one scary nucleus, especially right now. Andre Kirilenko is having one great season. You know, Alexi Lalonde is having a rookie season that I didn't think that he would have. I've been high on this guy since he was drafted, but I didn't think he'd have that great of an impact early on. I mean, today, right now, with the T-Wolves probably being the OKC with 4 minutes left, he's got a double-double, 12 points, 12 assists. So, I mean, a guy like that coming off the bench is great. You know, they've had injuries. Bonnager's out still, you know, and sad performances from Derek Williams, who can't even average 20 minutes a game. But somehow this team is 12-11, and they're going to get better.
Yeah, I'm very fearful if I'm any high-seeded team in the Western Conference. You look what they're doing to Oklahoma City tonight. If that's somehow the matchup in the first round, Oklahoma City should be very scared. If somehow they're the one and Minnesota's the eight, or they're the two and Minnesota's the seven, somehow how that would work out, I would be very scared. If I was a higher-seeded team playing the Timberwolves, I would not be happy about it. You look at this Timberwolves team, I can't believe they stayed afloat without Love and without Rubio during this time. Rubio's only played two games now. Love's played 13. But at the same time, you just look at these guys and you would not think that they would still be able to be in the playoff picture at this point. You think that they'd have to be catching up from behind, and the fact that they were able to stay around 500 is really, I honestly think, a credit to Andrei Kirilenko. Kirilenko has looked like, I'm not going to say quite the Kirilenko that we saw in Utah with the Jazz, when he was honestly probably one of the 15 to 20 best players in the league. He hasn't been quite that level, but he's been darn close, and he's really put on a show and kept them as one of the top teams in the West while Love and Rubio are out. And now that Love and Rubio are back, it's really scary for that Western Conference. The only thing is, you hope that Love's contract dispute and contract problems in Minnesota don't distract from what they've done, and it doesn't seem like they will. You think that Love has enough of an even head that won't be a problem, but they're a scary team. They are really scary.
And to me, the scariest part is if everyone was healthy on this team. I mean, you got Love, Petkovic, Kirilenko, Rubio, you know, Ridenour, Budenholzer, Shrad, Barea, Derek Williams, Dante Cunningham, Brandon Roy, who's hurt. I mean, Malcolm Lee's hurt now. Even Josh Howard, Greg Sizemore. This team is so deep that I think I gotta say it's the deepest team in the league. I know the Lakers are completely jealous of that. I know other teams got to be jealous too, like Miami and whatnot. But this team is just so deep, and if it was completely healthy, I honestly think they could be a top four team in the West. But that's a hard group to get into, because right now OKC, LAC, and Memphis have just played phenomenal basketball. You know, I was watching the Grizzlies play last night against the Bucks, and their defense, their first in defense with 89.5 points allowed a game, and I don't think that's going to be stopping. You know, Tony Allen's been great. You saw Monte Ellis last night. Ellis couldn't buy a shot. He finally got a shot with about 4 minutes left to go in the game. They're starting to line up with Randolph, Gay, Gasol, Conley, and Allen are just, it's such a defensive minded team, and especially starting lineup, that it's scary once it hits playoffs and you're playing some of these top teams. Durant's going to get shut down, or someone's going to get shut down against this team.
Yeah, those top four in the Western Conference are really just fun to watch. You look at that OKC team, obviously 21-4, just killing teams. And Westbrook's coming into his own, Durant's coming into his own. Now Ibaka's starting to come into his own. Good luck anybody in the Western Conference. And then the Clippers, Chris Paul has had an off season now to develop that system there in LA and be able to take control of that team, and now they look almost untouchable some nights. And like you said, Memphis, the defense they play, and then the high low of Gasol and Zach Randolph has just been incredible. You look at Marc Gasol, he might be the best center in the league right now with Dwight Howard's health problems. It's probably between Marc Gasol and Tyson Chandler right now, our best center in the league. And the Spurs just keep chipping away. They have a system down there. Popovich knows what he's doing, and the young players that they've had, Leonard has had some injury problems, but you look at Danny Green being able to contribute to that team, and then obviously the big three still getting it done at an old age. The top four in that Western Conference are just unbelievable, just
One
really incredible.
quick thing I want to say about the Clippers. You look at their statistics too. Jamal Crawford, who played awful last year for Portland. Jamal, he's back to what he is. He's averaging almost 17 a game. And then Matt Barnes is averaging 10 points a game for the Clippers. They're 13-0 when Matt Barnes scores in double digits this year. That's a ridiculous stat. Quickly, I guess we got to talk about Milwaukee, our home team, quickly before we go to the NFL. You know, they're 13-11. Somehow they're the 5 seed. I don't know how that's existing. Because you look at this team, and I don't know what to think about this team. Like a lot of teams. You know, the third-best scorer is Mike Dunleavy. I mean, finally, Mbamute is back, and he looks good again. But, and Ersan, just his team. I don't know if Scott Skiles knows what his best lineup is. I don't know if anyone knows what his best lineup is because it fluctuates so much game after game.
Yeah, the thing that really freaks me out with this team is that they're in the playoff race right now. Obviously, they're not even in the playoff race. They are in the playoffs at 5. And you look at this and you start to think about it, all right, well, Hammond's in a contract year. Skiles is in a contract year. James and Ellis are both in contract years. How does this all work out for the Bucks? Sometimes when you get in a contract year, you get guys that are overperforming and doing things that they normally don't do, playing a little bit better. But with a GM and a coach in a contract year, you almost have to start to worry about, are they going to do what's best for the franchise in the future? Because you look at this Bucks team, and they probably have, honestly, they probably have 10 to 12 guys that are average to above average NBA players. They don't have any superstars. None of these guys on the team are superstar. None of them are a franchise player. But they're all good. And there's very few bad players on this team. Maybe the only bad player would be Joel Prisbilla. But beyond
yeah.
that, every
well,
single player
your
on the
boy
team,
Drew Gooden.
Even him, I mean, you can't, I don't know if you can say he's a below-average NBA player. He's probably an average NBA player. He can find minutes just about any team in the league. So you look at that, you have 10 to 12 average above average NBA players. A team like that should be packaging those players together and sending them off for a superstar. Or they should package those players together and send them off for draft picks. But with John Hammond, what's he going to do? This is the make or break year for him. So is he going to package some of these players together and try to get himself a superstar so that he can make a run in the Eastern Conference? Because if you're John Hammond, isn't that the way you save your job?
I guess, but, I mean, what superstar are you looking at? I mean, I saw Chad Ford talk about Anderson Varejao, job, but, no way, is that a superstar? He's never really had a healthy season. And I guess you trade Ilyasova and, you know, package up probably two other guys, maybe a pick to get Varejao, but does that really help this team? Yeah, it helps rebounding, but it's probably hurting Sanders. You know, he's having a breakout year. He needs to continue to get minutes. It really what it is to me is that this team, there's a lot of, with Sanders, Tobias Harris, Udo, and Henson, all these guys need to get minutes, but there's not enough minutes to go around.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. There's just too many average to above average players on this team. You have to either find superstars or find bad players. And I know that sounds silly to say, find bad players, but that's how the NBA works. You can't play a rotation of 10 to 12 players each night. That's just not realistic in the NBA. You need to find good players to play and with a mix of superstars, or you need to find good players and then bad players that sit on the bench and don't play. And that's just not what the Bucks have. So, like I said, I don't know if there's a trade for a superstar out there. And like you said, who are the superstars that they could even get? It's really, honestly, very questionable. That you had mentioned Anderson Varejão. Could they somehow put a package together for Pau Gasol? That's a lot of money to try to make up. And would Hannon even want Pau Gasol? I don't know. But like you said, it's really tough to figure out where this team is going. Because with the path they're on right now, they're going to be a 5 or 6 seed for the next 4 or 5 years. And what does that honestly do for you? Getting the playoffs is
Right.
good, but if you have 5 or 6 seed, you're not going to beat the Miami Heat. This team doesn't have a chance against the Miami Heat in the 7-game series. So what's the point?
Well, I mean, their ceiling is a 5 and 6. They're really, it's a 5 to a 9 seed really every year, and that's what they've been, and that's what it's going to be. We talk about this all the time. You don't want to be in that area. What's so great about that area? You saw that with Orlando. You saw that with Atlanta. Now Atlanta's getting somewhat better after getting rid of Joe Johnson, but I mean, you just don't want to be in that realm. And you look at who they could get. Really, I just look at the bottom teams. Washington, they're not gonna. You're not gonna get John Wall, and none of the other guys are that great. Cleveland, Barajal, yeah. Detroit, they're not getting rid of Knight or Monroe. Charlotte, you're not gonna want anyone besides Kid Gilchrist, and they're not gonna get rid of him. Andrea Vargnani, no thanks. And you look at the Western Conference. Sacramento, the only guy anyone wants would be DeMarcus Cousins, and there's no way this team would trade DeMarcus Cousins because they already have 30 million players of their own that are just, they don't know what to do with their team. So really, I guess, I don't know. I don't know if you're asking about Marcin Gortat. I guess that would be a big guy, a center that could average, if he could, he could average maybe a double-double. Besides that, you said Gasol, but I don't know really besides that.
Yeah,
Do you think of
it's re
any options?
honestly, there's not a ton of options out there. The Bucks have really put themselves in a tough spot here, and like I said before, I shouldn't say they're one of the few teams. Obviously, every NBA team probably has to think about this, but the Bucks with the arena they have in the BMO H Bradley Center. You don't necessarily know if their future in Milwaukee is safe. There's been rumors about Michael Heisley, the former Grizzlies owner, being interested in the Bucks. But at the same time, are they worried about the bottom line and keeping a quality team around just so they can keep a team in Milwaukee? Because if that's the case, then it is very hard to bottom out. And it's very hard to get yourself a high pick because you want to keep a good team so that you keep the team in town. Is that an actual concern that's going on? Hopefully it isn't. Hopefully that isn't something that's driving how the team's been run, but at the same time, it very well could be.
And that's what happened in Seattle. They decided, you know what, we're going to bottom out for once, and there you are in Oklahoma City. But that's enough NBA talk. It's time for some football talk, football time. And with that, we kind of need Steve Cashmoney to get in here. Steve, you online now?
Hey, you guys actually remembered about me. I like it.
Oh, don't worry. I didn't want to leave you too hanging. I know that then the world is near for you. You're scared.
I am driving 15 miles an hour under the speed limit currently in the snow apocalypse, going to hang out with some friends to celebrate the real apocalypse.
Well, good luck with that. As always, let's recap the playoff picture and landscape from really week 15. You saw some, I guess, one good game, and the rest were just not good. Really, this was supposed to be the best week of football, and it was kind of just atrocious. But let's go to that first game. I know Steve wants to talk about it. The San Francisco 49ers 41, the Patriots 34, Sunday Night Football. You know, Colin Kaepernick, 4 touchdowns. Tom Brady, only 1 touchdown, but he also had a rushing touchdown. Really, Steve, you can start. This was your game. Talk about it. What did you see from this game?
The tale of two halves, I would guess you'd have to call it. The first half, San Francisco played absolutely amazing, and the first 10 minutes of the second half or so before Tom Brady decided to turn it back into Tom Brady. But the Niners' defense did well against the Patriots for the most part. You get up to a really big lead like that. Kaepernick made three really, really nice throws down the field for three of the four touchdowns, which is always going to be a good sign. And then I think another big part of the whole game was when the Patriots came back, the Niners got a much-needed return out of Michael James and a touchdown to Crabtree. And also, then they held the Patriots on two possessions there to really close out the game. So, really, definitely a good game for them to win. And it was big if they want to get that second seed, which I feel like they got a good shot at now. But definitely didn't like the fact that the Patriots came back. But I feel like that could be beneficial if they meet again in the Super Bowl because they know what the Patriots did successfully against them. So the game plan could possibly help them out there.
Yeah, this game, it was a great game, especially in that second half. I've seen Tom Brady really being vintage Tom Brady, scoring on four straight possessions in a matter of, in real time, it was about 45 minutes, which was, or an hour, which is really impressive to see from Tom. And, you know, these teams are very even. You know, you look at this defense, obviously San Fran has a better defense. And it showed, especially in that first half. But New England has that dynamic offense that really blossomed in that second half. Tom Brady could find Brandon Lloyd for 10 catches for 190. I don't think Lloyd's got that all season. Hernandez with 10, you know, Welker with 56 yards. Brady can find his receivers no problem, even with the top defensive on him. And really what this game came down to was the fumble. There are 8 total fumbles, including 4 from Kaepernick. But Kaepernick didn't lose any, and really it was a 7-1 victory for the 49ers in fumbles. Eric, what did you see from this game?
It was honestly a very interesting game. I think it proved how little any of us know about the NFL. Because, I mean, obviously you expected the Patriots to score at this rate, but for the 49ers to go out and put 41 points on the board, that was just something I honestly didn't see coming. Kaepernick made some great throws, but at the same time, I think it was kind of emblematic of what Kaepernick can bring as a quarterback. You see the very good, which was the first half, but also you see the very bad. You saw the fumbles. Obviously, you'd already mentioned it, that 8 of the fumbles they had, they recovered 7 of them, which is not necessarily a huge statistical anomaly, but still probably the Patriots should have got about 5 of those if you really get into the statistics, but obviously that doesn't much matter. But you saw the very good and the very bad. Even with the game Kaepernick had, it was still only 216 yards passing, but those 4 touchdowns were all huge. So you saw just the kind of player that he can become. And at the same time, you see Brady go out there for 443 yards, and yet he only throws 1 touchdown, and you have just fumble after fumble from the offensive players on the Patriots. It was honestly just an unusual game. I didn't think I really thought the 49ers would score that much. I didn't think the Patriots would turn the ball over that much just because under Belichick, they've been a team that's taken care of the ball at a pretty high rate. So really just kind of unexpected. It was just a really out-of-the-norm type game, I thought, from both of those teams.
It was easily the best game, I mean, besides maybe Dallas-Pittsburgh, but, I mean, no one really cared about that game. It's kind of a boring game.
The fumble, the thing was, if you do fumble from under center, offense recovers the ball about 75% of the time. One of them came on fourth and about a foot. So that's basically like the Patriots recovering the fumble for all intents and purposes. They only fumbled the 49ers lost. Probably shouldn't even have been called a fumble.
Okay.
So I don't understand why you're arguing this. Like,
we both read the same articles.
Like, all three of us have read the exact same article that states that 5 of 8 should have been recovered by the 49ers, so I don't understand why you're arguing this.
All right, cool. Anyways, that was probably the best game of the slate, really. I guess 49ers 10-3-1 now. They're looking for that number one seed in the NFC. They're not going to get it. They're going to probably get that two seed. But it's all going to depend what happens this week against Seattle, who absolutely annihilated the Buffalo Bills this week. They're just constantly annihilating teams somehow. Russell Wilson rushes for, what, 3 touchdowns? They score 50 points once again. Marshawn Lynch, 100 yards. Somehow this team is just firing on more than just all cylinders. I think they just added another cylinder to this team. And this Sunday night game, it's going to be a really good game. I guess Eric left us. I mean, Steve left us. So it's just me and you, Eric.
Oh, okay. yeah, it really should be. You look at these two teams, I thought they were very evenly matched in that first game that they had with San Francisco and Seattle. It was a one-possession game at the end. Since then, I think Seattle has become a much better team. Russell Wilson has understood how to become a quarterback at the NFL level quite a bit more, has understood how he can actually be effective. And Seattle's put in more things where they have them. You saw this week run the read option, like you're seeing the 49ers do with Kaepernick. Or really, they're just using Russell Wilson's skills quite a bit better. So I think that offense has become significantly more threatening. And obviously, on defense, they're still going to be very strong. And it's going to be a great game. I'm honestly very excited for it.
It's a team that's really evenly matched with San Fran. I know Steve would like to say that San Fran's a better team, but you look at this team, even on paper, I like Seattle's rushing more than San Fran, and really, it's pick your quarterback, Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick, and right now, with Russell Wilson's 4 touchdown performance, Kaepernick had 4 touchdown performance, but Russell Wilson just looks really good to me, and I like this team, you know, all the way around. They're Golden Tate, Sidney Rice, Zach Miller, everyone's playing well there. And that defense, you compare the defenses, they're pretty similar once again. Obviously, Sherman probably, if his suspension does not get upheld, he'll stay. But whatever it's worth there, the Seattle defense is just as dynamic as San Francisco. And really, I don't know what to expect again from this game on Sunday. I'd like to say Seattle wins because they're at home. They're undefeated at home. And they're just rolling, but San Fran just had a great win. But if we had to pick who you got, I'm going to take Seattle in this game because just the way they've been playing, 50 points in 2 straight games, that's surprising. And the game before that, they beat Chicago in overtime. So this is a team with confidence, and if there's a gun to my head, I'm taking Seattle.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. You take a look at this Seattle-San Francisco game. Seattle, like we mentioned, undefeated at home. They really are just such a tough team at home with the defense they have. And like I mentioned, the offense has been significantly better since the last time the 49ers saw them in Week 7. It's really improved Russell Wilson's, to fill a cliche, spread his wings and started to fly as a Seahawk. But he really has been quite a bit better. He looks a lot more comfortable now, and they're starting to exploit defenses a lot better with his abilities. So this is going to be a very interesting game, and I think a game that Seattle can really win.
Did you just quote R. Kelly?
I might have. I tried to get an R. Kelly quote with a pun mismatched with some wings flying. I think I blacked out during it. I'm not 100% sure.
I really liked it. Luckily, I'm wearing my Kelvin Johnson boner pants, so it's all okay. let's quickly talk about this game I don't want to talk about. Broncos 34, Ravens 17. Joe Flacco looked awful. He threw an interception that just was inexplicable. 98 yards to Chris Harris, interception return to make that the score 17-0 to nothing before halftime. Could have been 10-7. Game could have been a lot different, but from there, it just got worse, and really, this Baltimore team does not look good all of a sudden. I questioned this Broncos team last week. They haven't really played anyone lately. Well, they just shut out in that Ravens team, and they're kind of locked into that two seed. Peyton Manning, going back to the playoffs, I would be scared if I had to play them. Playing Cleveland since Kansas City the last two games, so they should finish up 13-3. But with Baltimore, you know, they have games remaining this week against the Giants, who got just shut out by the Falcons, and then have to play at Cincinnati, who's vying for that sixth spot. I guess my only question with the Ravens is, will this team, can they win even in the playoffs, the game?
It's tough. I mean, you mentioned it, that pick six, that 98-yard pick six, I can't think of a bigger play, not even just in this week, almost in this entire season, that shaped the entire game. That completely changed the entire momentum of the game. Even if the Ravens completely stall out, have to kick a field goal there, you're still looking at one possession game. Instead, he goes back for 98 yards, and at that point, it almost, going to that halftime, it just felt like the game was out of reach for the Ravens. And I mentioned last week, I feel bad for them that they have so many injuries, but once they start to face teams in the playoffs, teams really are just going to take advantage of that defense and how little they can match up now with all the injuries that they have. And you have to think, I just really don't think they have a chance in the playoffs, really, against anybody from the AFC.
I agree. Let's go to Giants-Falcons here quick. 34-0. It wasn't even a contest. It was done in that first drive with Michael Turner running it in. Eli Manning looked awful. 13 for 25, two interceptions, no touchdowns. And they actually had a viable running offense. 21 carries, 97 yards. It's 4.6 yards a carry. Craig Lumpkin, shout out. He's back in the NFL. Former Green Bay Packer, 9 carries, 42 yards. I'm like, wow, I didn't know he was still alive. But Matt Ryan, 23 for 28. I'm pretty sure he was connected on 10th straight at one point. I noticed this because I'm still in fantasy football playoffs. I don't know if you are, Eric. Oh, wait, I beat you last week. But, yeah, Matt Ryan, 3 touchdowns, including 2 to Julio Jones. And really, Atlanta pretty much clinches that one spot.
I'm not going to say. I honestly wish that I had the audio queued up from last week, but there was one guy, all of us three, that said, you know what, Falcons are going to take it to the Giants, and they're going to go into the playoffs with a lot of confidence. I don't think it was you, and I don't think it was Monty. It was me. Yeah.
I took the Falcons in this game.
No, I agree. It's funny how the Giants work. I've always thought this, that they just know how to, I don't even know where it is, play possum, I guess it would be, that they just mess around for parts of the regular season, and then when it really matters, get themselves in the position that they need to be for the playoffs. But like I said earlier in the show, almost each and every game this week just showed all of us how little we know about the NFL. Week to week, it's different. From week to week, one team plays good, one team doesn't play good. And that it really just matters who peaks at the right time, who's the healthiest at the right time. And going forward, I honestly think you take a look at the Giants, like you'd mentioned, the game almost seemed out of reach in the first quarter. But if you're the Giants, I think you just try to get guys healthy. You hope that Ahmad Bradshaw can be healthy at some point. David Wilson had looked great the previous week, but is he a feature back? I don't necessarily think he is. I think he's a guy that could look great if he's splitting carries with somebody, but if he's doing it by himself, I don't necessarily know if he can hack it. You look at 12 carries for 55 yards, just that offense didn't look as dynamic with just him as the lead back. So going forward, you have to wonder if getting Ahmad Bradshaw healthier, just getting the team healthier as a whole, is going to help them going forward. And at this point, are they going to make the playoffs? That NFC East is tough. It's honestly really tough, and I think the Giants will get to the playoffs, but there is now a question whether or not they will.
I mean, they play Baltimore this weekend. I guess that really depends. If they lose to Baltimore, I think they're out because then they go to 8-7, you know. And then Washington this week plays at Philadelphia. If RG3 is back, even if Kirk Cousins plays a great game, we don't really get to that. But heck of a job by him winning that game 38-21. But really, Washington's in the driver's seat. They play at Philly and then home against Dallas. That could be the game right there, but I don't know if the Giants are making those playoffs, as you just mentioned. And you go at Baltimore against home against Philadelphia. So you're either, I know you're beating Philadelphia probably because they're just giving up on the season. But at Baltimore this week at 3:25, who you got?
Ooh, that's really a tough game to pick. I think with the Giants, they tend to react when their back is against the wall. So I think the Giants are going to win that game. But at the same time, Baltimore is in the exact same predicament. So that's a really interesting game where you have Baltimore who needs to try to continue to win, even though they do have their playoff berth clinched. But just from a confidence standpoint, if you're the Baltimore Ravens, you got to win a game. You just can't go into the playoffs struggling the way that they've been struggling. So you look at both Baltimore and the Giants, that's an important game for them. I think the Giants pull it out, but it's going to be an interesting game. And both teams are trying to get more healthy and trying to get some confidence going forward.
But I mean, I don't think Baltimore is going to lose two straight home games in a row in 2 consecutive weeks and really lose 4 in a row. I just think somehow something. I guess Ray Lewis will probably say a whole bunch of things to his team this week will motivate them. I don't know how Baltimore would lose 4 in a row. I'm pretty sure Ray Lewis would self-combust on the sideline. Pretty sure the entire team would just melt. So I'm definitely taking the Ravens this week. Finally, another game we had was Texans 29, Colts 17. Texans clinched the South. Really, is there anything else we want to say about this game besides really the Colts are making the playoffs too?
No, I mean, I think we all thought that the Texans were going to come off that loss against the Patriots, play well, get themselves a win inside their division, and just continue to improve their playoff position. But this Colts team is a good team. I don't necessarily think they're going to win a playoff game just like the Ravens. I think those are going to be your first round losers in the AFC. I think you have the Colts and the Ravens as your first round losers. But really, it's just not quite there yet for the Colts. And honestly, for any of us to think that it would be crazy, considering the year that they had last year. For them to be even in this position is crazy. But
Yeah,
you
but
really have
somehow
confidence that they're there.
we might have the two worst teams from last year make the playoffs this year. So that's something we'll
Yeah.
look at. But let's look ahead to this week's slate really quick. Christmas week, obviously. No Thursday game tonight. No Monday game, but we got Saturday night, Falcons, Lions. Probably will be a high-scoring game. I would guess Kelvin Johnson probably will be targeted another 20 times. Other games that matter, Bengals, Steelers, who are you picking there?
That's an interesting game there with the Bengals and Steelers. The Steelers didn't look great this week. You have Ben Roethlisberger worried about the play calling there. Steelers are at home, and you think they need a win. I'll take the Steelers there, but I don't necessarily feel very confident just because they've struggled as of late.
I'm going to take Cincinnati. They just need one win and they're in. Obviously, I think they'd rather win this week and just be done with it, get that sixth seed wrapped up. I'll take them against the Steelers. I just don't know what to expect from the Steelers team right now with all these injuries still coming back. And Cincinnati playing well right now. You know, winning one straight, obviously, it's not a win streak, but I think they'll make it a win streak after beating Pittsburgh. Finally, one other game I want to mention is Vikings at Texans. Adrian Peterson's going for 2,000. Houston Texans want to stop that. They want to make sure they get this number one seed wrapped up. They pretty much do, but AP and the Vikings are, as of right now, in the playoffs. Who you got in this game?
I'm going to go Texans. AP's some sort of football-playing robot, which is incredible, but I think I'm going to take the Texans. They're just too good.
I agree. I think you have to take the Texans at home. I think there's no doubt about that, but I'm cheering for AP to get this record win the next two games. Such a great story. Really, he is that team in a nutshell. If they make the playoffs, that's another team I can't believe makes the playoffs, especially with Christian Ponder at quarterback. But that's another talk that we can have some other time. We're running late, so it's about time to end the show. Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Halftime Show, brought to you here on Sports Geeks Radio, presented by BetUS. You can find all of our episodes on iTunes. You can follow us all on Twitter. And don't forget to come back for the latest sports news and notes. Hopefully you guys don't get, apocalypse doesn't happen. For Steve, Monty, and Eric Mame, I'm Cody Sager. Happy holidays. Thanks for listening.